Mabel Louise, we're calling it Catch and Match Month, right?
Yes, so exciting. That's right. It's been a lean summer, like so many businesses and nonprofits have said. So this month is our Catch and Match. So please enter in. We'd be so grateful. Okay, can I carry on, Pat?
Indeed, please.
All right. Well, good morning out there to each one of you. Hope you're having a good day. I always have a good day when I can be with you. Say, how do you like these cool temps? I've got on a jacket and it feels good. I understand it got down to the low of 45. How about that? Broke a record. Well, it did really feel like a little taste of fall. Where'd the summer go? Well, you know what? I went out on my front porch to enjoy a cup of hot coffee and watch Mr. and Ms. Robin come and go. And I had to come in and get a sweater. Yep, it was cold. Oh, well, you know what? That's Wisconsin. Wait a minute, and the weather changes. Well, how is your garden doing these days? Yes, the Lord has sent us so much nice rain and sunshine. And my son Terry and Carol have a large garden, and it is beautiful. And I'm enjoying those nice green beans and yellow lettuce and cucumbers. Yummy for the tummy. Well, we are so thankful for everything that comes from the Lord. Isn't he wonderful to allow us to have those nice gardens? Well, today's message was a fun one to prepare. I got out several of my Holy Land books to scan them and so I could tell you what it was like in gardening in Jesus's day. How about that? Something a little different, and I thought it would be interesting. It was for me, and I hope it will be for you. Well, during the earthly life of the Lord, the land of Palestine was primarily a rural society based on agricultural economy. Palestine's largest city was Jerusalem. And the estimated population, and that's what it said in the book, was 25,000. Well, you know, last time I saw a sign at the edge of Chippewa Falls, Wisconsin, it was, I believe, 27,000 something. So if in your mind you can think about the fact that Jerusalem was about the size of Chippewa Falls, Wisconsin. However, thousands came during those three main festivals of the Jews. The city was just packed with people. And the vast majority of the population lived in very small villages, and those villages were scattered all throughout the countryside. Some were nomadic and some semi-nomadic, and most of them herdsmen. And this group of people lived in tents and they traveled from place to place. Well, Jesus, as you know, was born in the village of Bethlehem, which is about 5 miles from Jerusalem. And all the land surrounding the city was pasture land used by the flocks of sheep. And Jesus learned the carpentry trade from his stepfather, Joseph. And along with making furniture, Jesus would have learned to make plows, yokes for the oxen, donkeys, and he would have been making carts for the farmers. And no doubt Jesus' family would have had a garden to provide food for the family. Perhaps they even had a goat or two for milk and for cheese. Most of the families had a goat, and of course, cheese was one of their main foods. From his childhood, Jesus would have had firsthand experience with all of the aspects of farming. And so no wonder that his teachings are recorded in the Gospels, are certainly filled with agricultural references. Well, the major crop in Palestine and throughout the Middle East was barley and wheat. Barley was primarily raised for animal feed, but it was also used for flour by the poor. John recorded that the lads, 5 loaves that Jesus used to feed the 5,000, were barley loaves. That was found over in John chapter 6. And also they planted millet and rye as cereal grains that were also mentioned in the scriptures. And all 3 Gospels record the incident of Jesus' disciples threshing heads of corn. The commentaries tell us that this was probably grains of wheat that was in their hands and they were eating the kernels. I can remember as a child going to the wheat field on the farm with my dad. And he would want to know if it was ready to thrash. And so he would take the head of one of the heat of the wheat and he would rub it through his hands. And then he would taste it and chew on it to see just exactly how much longer that he would have to wait before harvest. So this tells us that many of the roads of those days were merely beaten paths through and between the cultivated fields. If you recall in the parable of the sower, Jesus said that some seed fell by the wayside and it was trodden down. Well, the parable of the sower also illustrates the usual method of planting grains in Bible times. The ground was broken up as best it could be with the plows of that day, which dug a depth of 2 to 3 inches. And by the way, the plows were made of wood. It was made up of 2 wooden beams that were joined together, and at the front end it is hooked to a yoke, and at the rear end it is fastened to a cross piece, the upper part of which serves as a handle, and the lower part holds the iron plowshare. Even today, these simple plows can be seen in Bible lands. These plows could, without a lot of work, be changed into swords for warfare. If you remember, if you read, the prophet Joel said, beat your plowshares into swords. Joel 3:10. Then the farmer placed his seed in a bag which would have hung over his shoulder, right down to his waist, and he would walk through the field, take a handful of grain, and fling it in a sweeping motion just ahead of him. Sometimes the farmer would come back over the field with a harrow or a rake to cover the seed and speed the germination. Jesus recognized and used this as an illustration of distributing the word of God. Let me read Luke 8:11-15. Now the parable is this: the seed is the word of God, and those by the wayside are they that hear. Then cometh the devil, and he takes away the word out of their hearts, lest they should believe and be saved. And they on the rock are they which, when they hear, receive the word with joy, and these have no root, which for a while believe, and in time of temptation fall away. And that which fell among thorns are they which, when they have heard, go forth and are choked with cares and riches and pleasures of this life, and bring no fruit to perfection. But that on the good ground are they which, in an honest and good heart, having heard the word, keep it and bring forth fruit with patience. You see, success in farming then, in Bible times, even as it is now, depends on adequate and timely rainfall. The Bible speaks of early and latter rain. Over in James 5:7, again in Deuteronomy 11, and again in Hosea 6. And this is referring to the rain that began the rainy season and the rain that ended the rainy season. In case you would know, here is what their rainy season is. It begins in October and softening the ground for plowing and planting. And that's when they get out their plows and sharpen them up and get them ready. And then the rainy season, or the latter rain, ends in March or April. So if the rains didn't come, the farmer would have to wait to plow the ground. Job said, "They waited for me as for the rain." And Jeremiah carried a little further and said in chapter 14, "There was no rain in the earth. The plowmen were ashamed, and they covered their heads." In other words, no rain, no plowing, no barley, no flour. It was must have been right in the middle of a drought, and of course, lack of food or a famine. Well, the farmer would get ready for plowing after the first rain. He would spend time making sure that his plow was in good repair and ready to go. He might need to cut and point a new goad, G-O-A-D, which would be used in prodding his team of oxen. You might have called it maybe a whip. And all ill-shaped or too heavy of a yoke would be cut into fit the oxen's neck. And if it was not shaped just perfectly, it could cause sores and possible infection. And by the way, the yoke was a rude stick that fits the necks of the oxen. Two straight sticks protected down each side, and a cord at the end of these sticks and underneath the oxen's necks would hold that yoke in place. Jeremiah 28 spoke of the yoke. The goad was a wooden rod varying in length from 5 to 7 feet, and at the end of it would be a sharp point. The farmer would encourage his slow-moving oxen to get up and hurry up. It was such an ox goad that was used by Shamgar in slaying 600 Philistines, and that story is found over in Judges chapter 3. The conviction of sin that came to Paul, or Saul of Tarsus, on his way to Damascus and led to his conversion was compared to the pricks of an ox goad. Here's what it says over in Acts 26. It is hard for you to kick against the goad. The Lord spoke of the easy yoke that was promised to his obedient followers. I have my Bible open in front of me to Matthew chapter 11. Jesus is just really beginning to get into his ministry and traveling around, and multitudes of people are following him. And as I read, let me say that he says here that he is of all things are delivered unto me of my Father. And no man knoweth the Son but the Father, neither knoweth any man the Father save the Son, and he to whomsoever the Son will reveal to him. And then he ends with this, come, come unto me, all ye that labor and are heavy laden, and I will give you rest. Take my yoke upon you and learn of me, for I am meek and lowly in heart, and ye shall find rest unto your souls. For my yoke is easy and my burden is light. This is a perfect way to end the broadcast, with the Lord inviting you to come to him. Come to him for salvation. Come to him for help in any situation in your life. Come to him for comfort. Yes, I could go on and on, but let me just end by saying, just come. That's what he wants for you today. Been good to be with you. Bye-bye.